Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 and FY24 earnings conference call of KFin Technologies Limited, hosted by IIFL Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Devesh Agarwal from IIFL Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Muskan. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Q4 FY24 earnings call of KFin Technologies Limited. From the company today, we have Mr. Srikanth Nadella, the MD and CEO, Mr. Vivek Mathur, CFO, and Mr. Amit Murarka, the Head Investor Relations. I would now hand over the call to Srikanth for his opening remarks, which will be followed by a Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, Srikanth.
Thank you so much, Devesh. Very good morning to one and all. Thanks a lot for taking time this morning to hear out about our quarter performance as well as the full year performance. Very excited to state our ongoing journey and the commitment to excellence as well as the shareholder wealth accretion. We have clocked our revenue growth of about 25%, EBITDA growth of about 25% as well, and a PAT growth of nearly 33% this quarter, making this one of the better quarter and hopefully a quarter that will set the basis of growth for the fiscal year 2025. On a full year basis, our revenue growth is at about 16.5%, EBITDA at about 23%, and the PAT growth at about 26% broadly. The diluted EPS for the quarter ending 2024, the last quarter is about 30%, and for the full year, it's about 25% year-on-year growth. This journey marks our secular growth across the business segments. We continue to maintain that the bedrock of our business will be and had been the Indian mutual funds business, with being the first registrar and transfer agent, you know, from a share transfer standpoint in India. We continue to grow that business, and it is the residuary 30%+ of the younger businesses, which broadly cover our international alternatives, pensions, and the acquisitions around fund administration. As you can see, the growth this quarter in those business lines had been near about 50% year-on-year. Issuer solutions about 20%, and the mutual funds business is roughly about 30% year-on-year growth for the quarter. It's been a very satisfying year thus far. And of course, it is still at the very beginning of our growth journey. We believe that the mutual fund business will continue to expand at a very rapid pace, as has been, you know, identified through a series of surveys and market research reports. We expect the AUM to double over the next 5 years or lesser than that. Looking at the pace of the SIP expansion, it is expected to happen much sooner than later. The alternatives market had been tearing up as well. We have witnessed a 60% increase in the AUM this year over the previous year, and a revenue that has nearly doubled during this process. The pensions market itself, though, had slowed down a bit in the previous year. The overall industry grew about 12%, but we have grown 28% year-on-year in the segment. We are a fintech company, and we continue to drive through technological innovations many our industry-first product and platform. Happy to inform one and all that the share of the value-added solutions and services has improved from 5.3% to 6% on a full year basis. This is despite an extraordinary growth across all lines of businesses, which explains that in absolute number, the value-added solutions have grown much faster than we ourselves have identified. And we believe that we continue to invest in areas which are not market dependent. It provides a good hedge. It provides us the stability, especially during the down market cycles. And many of businesses that we are looking at currently are not necessarily related to the movements of the market. As an entity, we continue to be the largest investor solution provider in India. In terms of the total investor and the folio count, it totals to near about 26 crore folios between the share transfer and the mutual funds and the alternatives, making us one of the largest registrar and transfer agents, not just in India, but in the world. Our market share on the overall market share on the AUM continues to grow, outpace that of the market, which is obviously a good indicator in terms of times to come, how our both overall AUM and equity AUM will continue to grow. You might have witnessed that the equity AUM, there had been a slight dip in terms of the market share. That is sequential in nature. That is something that happens, once every, few quarters when certain fund houses do better than the others. And the last few quarters definitely, had seen a faster growth in some of the asset managers managed by the other registrar. And to that extent, we do believe that some of these cyclicality will hit, and hopefully in times to come, we will have better fortunes in terms of the equity market share as well. But notwithstanding all of that, we continue to grow the mutual fund business at a very, very rapid pace, even as we have some of the newer fund houses who have grown quite rapidly in the past few years now. On the issuer solutions, we have added near about 200 plus clientele in the previous quarter. We have several mandates, which we can't just yet announce the names in terms of the confidentiality reasons, but then we believe that there will be game changes in time to come. We have added a series of new clients, who have transitioned from the other registrars, including Birla Corporation, Moltec, and a few others which are in the pipeline, including Usha Martin. We have launched several new solutions in issuer line of business, especially on the IEPF claim management, given the amount of complexity associated with that, as well as the investor grievances that come out of that particular line of business process. We believe that in time to come, this will add a significant amount of gravitas to our line of business, including addition of new clientele and transition of clientele, given very few have such a solution at this point in time. We have, beyond these two businesses in terms of the financials, very happy to inform that we have been awarded one of the first supervisory tech platforms. We continue to partner with the regulators across India and the globe to create solutions which aid in a very proper and a secure the monitoring of the markets, so to speak. This is a platform that we have created for SEBI in terms of the supervisory technologies. And the platforms that we've created, especially around Guardian, which is about insider trading related solutions, has now been adopted by several of the big four accounting firms, given this is the only solution that exists in the country and probably anywhere in the world in terms of leveraging account aggregation as a tech solution for monitoring insider trading across the corporates. We have continued to expand our data lake solutions, not just to our clients, but also to the clients beyond, who are currently not with us in terms of the RTA side of it. We have won a series of contracts in the wealth as well as in the fund accounting side, including on the asset management side. International business, our number of clients have increased to 57. In the last quarter, I had updated that we have moved the number to 54, which marks that, three new clients have been won during this intervening quarter. This obviously adds the biggest scope of growth for us, as even as, we break through the initial resistance in each of the new geographies. I'm sure one would appreciate that going into a new country, creating platforms and solutions fully compliant in a regulated environment takes a certain amount of time, and it takes a little bit more time to convert the clients, or rather the potential clients, into a real client. And it takes time. It's a time-consuming process, but it's a very, very rewarding process, especially when we all know the stickiness of these contracts, where we seldom lose a contract that's once we have. A very complex piece of work. And last quarter, I had updated about wins in Thailand, happy to announce that we have cleared 70% of the milestones in terms of the go live, and into the upcoming quarter we will be going live, which marks the first fully live contract in Thailand, even as several new potential clients we are in discussion with on the back of this particular contract which we are about to deliver. We have also been winning nearly 60% plus contracts in the GIFT City. During the previous quarter, we have added three new asset managers. We have secured additional contract in Hong Kong from our existing client, even as the pipeline has increased beyond $25 million, which we believe in all the different phases of sales life cycle, and hopefully we'll have many a win to come through Q1 and Q2 of this year. Alternatives market, had been the fastest growing for us. The previous year, our revenues have nearly doubled in the period of 2024. Even as the AUM has grown 60% plus year on year, we totally manage about 472 plus funds, marking a market share of nearly 37% in terms of the total funds that are there in India. Here, we not only win new mandates, but we have also been pioneering several transitions from other registrars in the country and beyond. We continue to have the only fully integrated transparency and fund accounting platform with full digital stack for alternatives market, with a multi-currency, multi-geo, multi-asset, now multilingual capabilities as well, called Exot, which is something we've launched in the previous quarter. Migration of all our clients is undergoing at this moment in time. We believe that in the next coming quarter, we would have wrapped up the migration of the existing clients, even as all the new clients are directly onboarded into this particular platform. National Pension System, I already called out. Again, a younger business, personal business being growing much, much faster than the industry, nearly three times, 2.5 times the pace of the industry we've been growing. Our market share has moved from zero to nearly about 10% in a matter of 3.5 years, marking our delivery excellence and our fintech innovation that we're bringing to an industry which we believe will rapidly rise in years to come, even as pensions as a topic will be adopted by the larger populace of the country. The overall industry performance is something that is very visible to everybody. Mutual funds have had a spectacular year, 30% plus growth year on year for the industry. And we offer a fairly reduced risk profile, not necessarily on a single AMC, given we manage 60% of the industry. It is a secular growth across all of them. We do believe that there are quarters when a certain AMCs grow versus certain others in different quarters. All of that, gives us good confidence to continue to grow at the similar growth that we have witnessed in the previous year. The SIP, which is obviously the most resilient factor of this business, has moved in the last 3 years from about 92 billion to about 192 billion, so more than doubled. And this obviously provides a much needed resilience, not just for the mutual funds market, but also for the capital markets itself. Our growth in SIP had been higher than that of the industry. We're at about 43-44% on the total market share, as against 33.5% on the overall AUM, which implies that the catch-up that is required between 33-44% will happen over a period of time into the coming quarters and years. On the alternatives, we have still, I think, nearly about 50% plus of the capital committed versus the capital drawn down gap that exists, which means that on the same client wins that we already have, there is a significant amount of capital that needs to be drawn down by the fund managers, which means that the revenue on the existing client itself, there is a significant scope for growth in this year and into the coming years, even as new clients we continue to add every single week, literally in the case of alternatives. Expansion of DMAT accounts obviously augurs very well for our issuer services business. In the preceding quarter, we have grown 20% plus year on year in the case of issuer solutions, and we have excellent visibility in terms of a similar growth profile that we could see into through the fiscal year 2025. quickly moving on to the international, which I have already covered a bit of it, but we have in fiscal year 23, 41 clients in total, and this year, you know, we have concluded with 57, so that marks an addition of 16 clients. The growth of this business, especially the wins, as I've called out, the transition can be a bit protracted at times, which means that at no point in time will we have a full year's revenue given we are winning new clients. For some clients, there may be a transition revenue. For some, there may not be. For some, which we may have gone live now, or some which we may go live 6 months henceforth. So it is hard to, you know, exclude any one-time revenues in this, but this would be an ongoing phenomenon of new client wins and some contributing to one-time transition revenue and some that may not. But a full year revenue of the win that we've had, you know, through this year can only be felt 6 months from now. But of course, the wins we've had during FY23, some of that has already been baked into the numbers, even as five more clients are yet to go live in the Q1 of this year. We have added one of the first TA contracts in Singapore, the one that we called out in the previous quarter. We have gone live. I've already called out about the Thailand deal as well, and we continue to look at opportunities to expand Philippines as a market. Recently, we have held conferences in Philippines, partnered with the regulator to add you know, significant value to that entire ecosystem, even as we intend to deliver the same in Malaysia and Singapore in this particular fiscal year. In terms of people, I would like to just shift a little bit focus into where we are on the expense management and in terms of the people. You would have seen there is a 2% growth quarter on quarter in terms of expense and a little over 20% less over the previous year. This is our commitment for delivery excellence and investments for future growth. A good part of definitely the payroll expense, you know, is something that we are investing in terms of audit and surveillance management. It is an exceptionally regulated industry, as we all know, that also gives us the moat that is required from competition. We have been investing significant amount of monies both in terms of the platform solutions and into the people to add the resilience that is required for the regulatory compliance works. And it is something that we believe is, you know, over the next 1 year we would have done with our investments in terms of compliance requirements on the platform, and which is something that, you know, we believe over a period of time will pay rich dividends in terms of reducing the operational costs associated with that. Some of these are one-time in nature, if I may. And once done, there will be tapering off both in terms of headcount as well as the spend on the technology. Next one, of course, was going to be on the investments in the leadership of the businesses itself. We are creating CEOs of the future for every line of business. We believe that each of these businesses themselves can be $100 million businesses in times to come. And accordingly, people who have the caliber of that nature are being recruited, and some of that cost is there. And of course, that is something that will continue to happen even as we build an organization for the future and indeed a global fund administrator from India. We have been very excited about the wealth management space, I've been calling it out. We have recently signed with one of the largest NBFC to deliver to the wealth solutions, even as we have nearly completed the new wealth platform, which is fit not just for India, but for the rest of the world. We anticipate to launch this particular platform late Q1 to early Q2, even as we have onboarded several clients in this quarter. At various specific business process modules being adopted in the case of wealth management for this client. We have also signed one of the largest custodian bank for fund accounting solutions for the alternatives market. And last but not the least, very happy to inform you that two of the subsidiaries, you know, the acquisitions that we have done in the preceding year and the one prior to that, Hexagram and Webile Technologies, have both turned cash profit. In fact, Hexagram has clocked a 45% EBITDA margin, much higher than expected in the context of the new wins that we've had, and hopefully this will be the start of the significant growth trajectory for all of the subsidiaries that KPFintech has at this point. I will take a pause here and I will turn it over to Vivek to cover the financial performance, after which we will take any questions. So, to me.
Thank you, Shrikant. Good morning, everyone. On the financial performance, revenue from operations has sequentially gone up quarter on quarter by about 4.4% and year on year for the same quarter by about 24.7%. If you see the composition of the revenue mix, the revenue from domestic mutual fund is about 69%. Within that, the fee-based revenue, you know, and the VAS revenue is something which has grown, you know, exponentially in terms of the growth. The issuer solutions continues to be about 13% of the revenue. International and other, you know, services, revenue has grown from 9% last year to 11% this year. And that's what Shrikant explained in terms of the composition of the new wins that we have been having. The global business services, the mortgage service business, the contribution to revenue is about 4%. And then there is other operating income of about 3%. So overall, you know, with the buoyancy of the domestic mutual fund market, you know, we have seen that, you know, the companies have, their clients have actually moved from, you know, in terms of tier structure to a better structure in terms of their cost. And we have seen a dip in terms of the yield, while overall it remains robust. So overall 16% change in year-on-year in terms of growth on revenue from operations. EBITDA margins, you know, have seen 6.8% growth quarter-on-quarter and 23% year-on-year. And we believe that, you know, we continue to operate in that range of 40 to 45%. For the quarter, we have ended with 45.8% EBITDA margin, while for the year, we have clocked about 43.8% margin, which is 238 bps higher than last year. PAT is 30.6% growth sequentially in terms of same quarter last year. Quarter on quarter, there is a growth of 11%. And, you know, if you see year on year, we have seen a growth of about 25.7%. So 246 crores of PAT, and the PAT margins are in the range of 29.4%, which is 220 bps higher than last year in terms of the overall margins. So the economies of scale, the investment that we have been doing in terms of technology and people is paying off in terms of market rewarding us in terms of, you know, new contracts coming in. And we have now maintained a cash and cash equivalents of more than 400 crores despite repayment of RPS during the year. You know, it's a healthy cash and cash equivalent that we carry. And as a result of that, the board has, you know, actually recommended, you know, a dividend of five rupees 75 paisa for this year, which is subject to the shareholders' approval. So this is a maiden dividend by the company. We have never declared dividend in the past. This is going to be the first year subject to shareholders' approval. Happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking the questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for the moment while the question queue assembles. And the first question is from the line of Abhijit Sakre from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, good morning, everyone. Just on the international slash alternatives, if it's possible to give, you know, further breakdown of, let's say, international and alternatives separately. And then part B is that how much of this revenue is actually linked to AUM growth and how much of it is actually, you know, platform deals and something which is, let's say, one time in nature.
Hi, Abhijit. Good morning. So the international, the other investor section, as you know, covers about four distinct items, which is the GFS, which is our international fund services, alternatives, Hexagram, which is on fund accounting administration side. Part of that, of course, also is for the international markets. Broadly, the pure international is roughly about 40% of that. Near about 35% plus, 35% thereabouts will be the alternatives, and the rest will be the other businesses. In terms of the revenues attributable to one-time platform deals, especially the international one, almost all of that is on AUM based. The platform-based revenue is usually resident in the Hexagram side of it, you know, which is the platform-based fund accounting solution that we have.
And the Hexagram part of it is, when you say it's platform, do we understand it as, you know, one time, or it's in part one time and part of it is actually recurring and some sort of a license fee that is, you know, charged every year?
It is the latter. So every contract that we have on the fund accounting side, when a platform is deployed, there is a one-time platform fee, and there is a ongoing customization change request fee that comes because no platform ever remains exactly the same. So there's a significant amount of revenue that we generate every single year, even if the contract has been implemented in a given year. Outside of the change-related revenue that we draw, there is also the annual maintenance contract, which can range anywhere between 25% to 35%. And on the increased value of the platform, including that of the change request. So it is not a one-time episodical revenue, but there is a recurring revenue attributed to every contract that we have. Okay.
Got that. And it's good to see the number of deal wins and, you know, the pipeline sort of filling up. But it will be useful if we can, you know, start giving something like, you know, a TCV number or some way to, you know, track what is the forward outlook on growth coming from this business.
Absolutely. So I think yeah, during this year sometime, you definitely see that happening. As mentioned, in the last year, we were waiting for a certain amount of gravitas to happen for each of these businesses. I mean, I think the magnitude is important. And as you've seen, 50% growth year on year, and each of the businesses are getting larger. It would be a lot more meaningful into the coming quarters as the size of each of the businesses, you know, starts to make sense in its own individual way. But we will do that.
Right. And the last one for Vivek is, you know, what's the expense growth outlook for next year?
So, you know, expenses will continue to grow in a range of about, 10%. And that's what we expect, that, you know, except the investments that we will do in terms of expansion into new markets, which will be one off as we are looking at getting into, more aggressively into Thailand awaiting RBI approval. And then Singapore, we want to expand further in terms of having physical presence. So there will be new investments that we will do, which will take a slight one-time hit in terms of setting of expenses, but that's what the outlook is.
Got it. Thanks a lot. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Lada from Nuvama Wealth. Please go ahead.
Hi. Morning. Congratulations on good numbers. First, I think partly you covered that in the previous questions. So you mentioned 40% is international, 35% is the alternatives India business, right? Are those numbers correct?
That's correct. Of the international business, of that segment of international business.
Of the segment of, yeah. And did you quantify the one-time? I believe there is some one-time revenue in this quarter. Did you quantify that, any chance?
Only more than 5% of the total revenue. And again, when you say one time, I want to be a little, clear about it. The one time revenue is for Hexagram usually, which is where we have platform based deals. We offer fund accounting as a platform for asset managers, whether you're a pension fund manager or an insurance fund manager. And that is there. In the case of pure international fund services, and for alternatives, there is no one time. Everything is a recurring revenue. There can be a little bit of transition revenue that we may get, but that will be immediately followed by recurring revenue on a monthly basis on the basis points.
Understood. So, so only on the hexagram side, there is the 5% sort of one-time contribution in the total total sort of revenue for the quarter.
Yes.
Got it. And we are also seeing a good margin improvement in the in the international other investor segment, right? What is driving that actually, and what should we expect in the near term, maybe in the next couple of years?
So as I've explained, first of all, that section of international energy solutions is aggregation of a few lines of businesses, and as they achieve the requisite scale, carve out individual section for that, which may happen this year for some of the businesses for sure. The profit growth is only but expected in the context of the scale and the efficiencies one would draw as you start winning more and more clients. My personal belief is that they are all still subscale and the margin expansion that is possible in each of those businesses is far higher than what we could accomplish as of now. For example, the international fund services. We have a lot of funds, but probably not a lot of AUM as you might have seen it, because a good number of them are small to medium tier AMCs. And to a certain extent, the markets in Southeast Asia hadn't been anywhere close to that of Indian market. So the world is expecting that the next 3 to 4 years, you would see a significant uptick in the growth of the Southeast Asian markets. As that happens, from our current client itself, the AUM will grow, that is a mark-to-market growth, for example, as what we have seen in Indian markets this year and the previous year. So the margin expansion for international is actually far higher than for Indian mutual funds for three distinct reasons that I had called out, and I will, for the benefit of all, explain again. One, the unit dynamics are significantly in favor of us, which means that as against the 3.7, 3.8 yields, basis point of yield, we draw near about 5.2 there. Second, in terms of the effort required, for example, 1,000 crores of AUM to process in India may require 1 million transactions. The same in international markets can be done with about 100,000 transactions. That means with about a tenth of the effort, you will be able to deliver equal amount of AUM. Right. And three, we do not have telescopic pricing. And in fact, in most cases, we have call-up clauses, which means our unit price itself will keep going up, as years pass by. So technically, the scope for the margin expansion for international is far higher than that of India. And what you're seeing now is basically as we are adding more clients and a certain amount of standardization, industrialization comes to play, there is already a margin expansion you saw. But we like to believe that as the scale further increases, quarter after quarter, year after year, we should see a far higher margin expansion possible in this business. And same is the case with pensions, same is the case with alternatives. Alternatives is another classic example. It's a very bespoke asset management fund administration, unlike mutual funds. No two clients, in fact, no two funds of the same client are same or similar. But once you have sufficient number of funds, we should be able to drive at a business process level as against a client level. So that would drive a significant amount of efficiencies and the cost reduction and hence the margin expansion over a period of time. We will drive that.
Understood. Again on the previous caller's question, you mentioned that there would be certain increase, one-time sort of expenses because we're expanding in Thailand and in other international geographies. Could you sort of quantify what is, 10% is sort of a normalized run rate of growth in expenses and the one-time expenses expected in FY25, could we sort of have a quantification of that?
I do not want to generalize, but let me explain in terms of what, under what circumstances do we have a one-time expense, right? first would be starting of a new geography. Starting of a new geography, I mean, I'm loosely using the word geography, but let's say a country. A certain amount of platforming work needs to be done, and it is quite complex. It takes a little bit of time to, you know, think of it like a brand new RTA coming up in India, right? It hadn't been easy for anyone to set up another RTA here in India. But we're able to do it in 5 countries in 5 years. So as complex as it is, I believe that, you know, we have understood the best way to go about it. Obviously, for the intervening period of starting a new country, there is a certain amount of one-time expenditure that will have to go for the platform generation. Second, obviously, till the time we win the deals, there is no revenue, and the cost of the leadership and the feet on the streets that you have to set up for your initial, you know, seed clients, a lot of that after happens, honestly, organically through word of mouth, etc. That is another, you know, one-time expense that you would see typically. Now, we may or may not start a new geography every single year, though we have done it in the last 5 years. So if there is no new geography starting, there is really no one-time expense associated with that particular country, so to speak. Now, second, even if you are not starting a new country, we may have won, let's say, 3 or 5 new contracts in a new country. And in some cases, we generate the revenue for transition too. Now, that depends on the commercial dynamics with the client. In some cases, it is possible that we do not earn a transition revenue, but a mere, you know, go-live revenue onwards. In some cases, it is a brand new client, which means a fund who's starting with zero ringgit or dollar AUM. In some cases, it is a transition from an existing fund administrator to KFintech, right? Obviously, in the latter case, there is going to be a certain amount of transition. In the former case, where it is a brand new fund, there is no transition because you're just setting somebody up. So it is a combination of all of these. I would really love to give, I know there's a lot of interest in understanding this particular question of one time, but if you're going to win 3 to 4 deals every single quarter, you know, you will always have this, you know, some that may have a one time, some that may not have. As is the case with the expense, same is the case with the revenue as well. So there may be a one time revenue, there may not be a one time revenue, but I would urge the stakeholders to consider this as an ongoing regular phenomenon. This is something that I do not believe will stop in the near term, because we'll continue to win deals. And as that happens, we may have one-time expense and one-time revenue, or we may not have. But broadly, they will more or less, you know, cancel each other out, the effect of both the revenue and expense associated.
Understood. And just on the one more question on the issuer solution side, have we lost a few companies in the NSE 500? Because I think the number of clients share has dropped over there. Is that reading correct? Or and why would that typically happen?
Clarification, we have not lost any of the clients. In fact, we have been transitioning clients from other registrars to KFintech, including State Bank of India, you know, earlier this year, Usha Martin. The previous year, we have done the transition of Varun Beverages, Viviani International, Castrol, Union Bank of India, so on and so forth. What you would have seen is based on the new IPOs that have been launched this year.
NSE 500 companies. So if you see, I think on the slide it is showing as NSE 500 companies, the market share has dropped QOQ from 37.3% to 36.8%. Or have I made a mistake?
So that market share needs to be measured in terms of the market cap of the companies, not the number of companies itself. Of course, the market cap by itself is not a It's not in our control. Again, some companies perform well in certain quarters and some not. It's not a count of the companies as much as it's the market cap of the company.
I think that you've given separately as market capitalization. By market capitalization is 46.1%, and by number of clients is showing as 37.3 going to 36.8.
Shrikant, you want me to take that?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thanks. Madhukar, you know, see, these NSE 500 companies, like what Shrikant was alluding, that, you know, the movement of market capitalization is not something which is under our control, right? And hence, I mean, the number of clients in that bucket, the number of folios, and the market capitalization. All three parameters basically are all dependent upon, you know, how the bucket of that 500 companies keep, you know, changing depending upon the market cap movement of respective companies in that, you know, the segment. And hence, I mean, what you're seeing here is pure movement in the number of clients based on the market cap fluctuations in that particular, you know, the 500 bucket and all. So there is no loss of client as such. It is purely that, you know, more transitory in nature, that some of the clients who might have, let's say, underperformed versus the other clients. And hence, I mean, those clients which got added into that, you know, the NSE 500 companies may not be, let's say, our client at this stage and all. And some of the clients might have moved out of that bucket. So there is no loss of client. It is simply that, you know, the clients shifted from NSE 500 to, let's say, NSE 1000, you know, set and all because of your market cap movement.
Understood. I got it. Thank you for the explanation. Thanks a lot. That makes sense. Understood.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Seth from Quis Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity, Srikant. Just one question. When we can, the kind of business that we are in, people is our one of the major asset apart from the technology side. Is that correct understanding?
Without a doubt. Absolutely.
So what is our strategy to retain, I mean, our this asset and for a long, medium-term perspective, what exactly we are going to do because our ESOP is getting over. So how do we plan to retain this?
A great question. Thank you. And that is something that obviously is much celebrated within management as well as with our board. Yes, I think the last pool of ESOP, you know, is probably nearly at the end of line. And as all good companies with good corporate governance, you know, we will look to have additional pool, you know, it's in the works. But that is not the only mechanism to have, you know, top talent working for an entity. I think, you know, we are all working for you know, a larger goal beyond just the commercial growth and probably an individual level career growth itself, which is, you know, we believe we have a very unique opportunity to create, as I've been calling it out time and again, the very first global fund administrator coming out of India. You know, in some sense, it is the moment of how Indian IT industry, you know, late 90s grew. One odd company has started the process of creating a global company, and then after 30 years, look at where the industry is. I respect the fact that, you know, the fund administration industry is not as large in market itself as a pure IT industry, but it is still, you know, roughly a $22 billion revenue industry today, right? I mean, look at the global fund administrators, you know, there is not one from India, and there is not half a decent reason why not. So we are all working with that much larger anchor goal of creating something, you know, that doesn't exist. Now, those things matter a lot to all of us and not just the commissions. Of course, you know, we continue to provide, you know, best-in-class comp structures, which is something that is probably visible in the payroll expense that you would have seen quarter-on-quarter, year-on-year. Apart from the other, you know, incentive mechanisms, whether it is long-term incentive plan or the ease of management, you know, beyond this. Also, the growth of international gives a very unique opportunity for our leadership to work beyond borders. We have already sent nearly about 15 people to work out of Kuala Lumpur, a few people in Thailand. Very soon as we expand into Singapore and the rest of the world, you know, we are able to provide opportunities to work and, you know, have a very enriching career, you know, in various parts of the world. So we believe that a combination of all of these, you know, would be the critical reason for a talent to persist with us. And if you look at our top talent, you know, we're very happy, you know, at the moment in terms of our top talent retention over the past 4 years.
Great. Second question, now we have already making a presence in the Southeast Asia market as well as Middle East also. So any strategy for going into the Western developed market, and what would be that strategy maybe in a short term, medium term?
Thank you so much. You know, without a doubt, you know, movement, or rather, you know, starting to win mandates in Europe and US is our immediate next goal in addition to Singapore and Dubai. But stating the obvious, I mean, you know, nearly as much as the growth of this generation, you know, had been and will continue to be in Asia, the current residuary wealth is pretty much distributed between Europe and the Americas. Near about 70% of the global wealth sits out of Europe and US. And to be a global fund administrator, not being there, we're really not global. We are probably at best regional in Asia, you know, and parts of Asia, if I may. So that is not what we intend to be. When you say global, we truly believe that, you know, it is across US and Europe included. We haven't yet started our operations in that part of the world, notwithstanding the fact that we have about, you know, three odd funds that we manage, you know, for a client in Canada. But it is not a rapid expansion, and that is something that is purposefully being done. To call out more specifically, the growth in the West will largely come on the alternatives side of it. And to be a credible fund administrator in alternatives, you need to be not just excelling in transfer agency, but more in fund accounting and administration. And for that, the first port of call is to have a platform which works for, you know, each of those domiciled entities. And that is what our focus had been. We have launched, as I've called out in Q4, a platform, you know, for transfer agency for the entire world called Exalt. Our fund accounting platform largely supports many parts of the world as it is a multi-currency and a multi-asset, but it still needs to bake into account a series of structure set up that are there in typically Cayman Islands and Luxembourg and Ireland, so on and so forth. And we have been working on that part of it. So it is a carefully constructed strategy to look at geographies and what is required to start. Because our line of business can't be equated to an IT or a BPO business, where technology does not differentiate between whether it's India or US or Europe. Our line of business requires us to create the, you know, the capabilities for our respective countries. So we believe that during this year, you know, should our platform be in a state to move, we will make all efforts to start at least one geography in Europe, if not more. But it is a 3 to 5 year plan. You know, we believe that over the next 3 years, we would have definitely started many countries in Europe and definitely in the US as well. Now, this is outside of any M&A activity. As all our investors know, we have been extremely progressive on our merger and acquisition strategy, not just acquiring, but making them profitable you know, within the first 1 to 1.5 years. We are constantly on the lookout, and should any of the you know, target acquisitions work out, you know, probably we would start sooner than later.
And last question, we have already won, say, some of the clients which are there in the GIFT City. So any plan to open a office in the or a company registering in the GIFT City to have a better accessibility as well as a lot of taxation advantage?
We already have an entity in GIFT City, which is there to support all the locally domiciled funds. That is, in fact, the mandate. We cannot manage the AI, the alternatives that are based out of GIFT City outside of GIFT City. So we have a center there. However, we are working towards creating a much larger center and a footprint to kind of move all our personnel who work on international business to be there. Should that, you know, and that is obviously, it goes through the regulatory process. Today we have nearly 1,000 individuals who work on international business between the global fund services and the global business services on the mortgage. As and when we get through the necessary regulatory approvals, we will set up a larger base in GIFT City, even as we already have one today for the alternatives.
Okay, thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, please limit a question to 2 questions per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Aejas Lakhani from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congratulations, team, on, you know, phenomenal execution in 24. Credit to all of you. Srikanth, just two quick questions. Point number one is on the main business of domestic mutual funds. Are there any client negotiations that are likely to come up in FY25 that could compress yields? That's question one.
Hi, good afternoon. We have had, I guess, an year which had the most number of commercial negotiations. That was the year that just concluded in March 2024. We have no more client negotiations pending for the next year.
Perfect. Srikanth, question number two is, I'm inferring from your previous conference calls where, you've spoken about, potential acquisitions in Europe and America, which you've been sort of keeping the cash pool for, and just triangulating from the dividend payout that is being already announced, is it fair to and your previous comment of your Europe region, is it fair to understand that nothing large or material is poised on the table at the moment, and the Europe endeavor is largely going to be organic rather than inorganic?
No, great question. So as Vivek had articulated, there is little over 400 crores of cash on books, including receivables, it will be higher. And every month there is cash coming into the books, and we have retired all our debt, including the RPS previous year. So given the current cash and what is accruing, every month, we believe that what we could accrue should be adequate for an acquisition we will look at. And should there be a further need, we can always do a certain amount of leverage. Cost of equity is higher than that of debt anyway. And so I guess it's fair to say that, we are very intentful of acquisitions, but not very large acquisitions. And you might have seen through our strategy, our largest acquisition was, less than $10 million. And we don't need such large acquisitions. In fact, we are unfavorably predisposed towards large acquisitions in terms of its success rate. We prefer to have, the M&As, in the range of 10 to 15, maybe max $40 million, because it is our ability to convert them make them more profitable in real quick time. And importantly, assets which open significant addressable market. It is not our M&A strategy to buy out companies just to add revenue and profits to the book. We look at companies which open up addressable market. For example, if you look at Hexagram, it has helped us to create our international strategy in terms of fund accounting and administration. When we acquired the Deutsche Bank set up in Malaysia, it given us the start for the entire international business itself. Our investments into the account aggregation is so that's how the M&A strategy typically is for us. It is not necessarily to buy large, entities to just add up the top line, bottom line. So long and short of it, I think the cash, what we have and what we would be accruing into the coming months and quarters, we believe would be adequate for an acquisition that we may have. And it is only after all of these careful consideration, we have initiated the dividend policy as well, this year.
Perfect. And Srikanth, the headcount was closer to 5,300 flattish, in the first half. What is the headcount count today? And could you also speak about, the infra, strategy where you were migrating people to Bhubaneswar and, you were looking to set up something in Vijayawada as well. So has that transitioning, how's that sort of progressing? Because that was helping you moderate OPEX costs. And what has been the IT spends for the year? Thanks. That's all from my side.
Absolutely. Thank you. No, it's so that strategy, we are doubling down our commitments for tier 2 locations. Last, when we spoke, the headcount in Bhubaneswar was about 60. Today, it's about 300. Right. I think it's been an excellent journey for us partnering with the universities. And the quality of the personnel had been absolutely a revelation for us. So earlier in Bhubaneswar, it was largely a technology team, and we have operations also being run from there. Same is the case with Vijayawada. Of course, we are creating different centers of excellence for different type of work. For Bhubaneswar, it's largely on data and analytics, on aspects of mobility solutions. Gujarat, we are looking for certain aspects of technology and certain aspects of operations. We believe it is the future of work. We cannot have a large centralized setups in large metro cities, to cater to clients with ever expanding payroll costs and real estate costs associated with that. And more importantly, I think the other downsides could be around attrition, so on and so forth. And we all believe that it's very important we have a social responsibility as well. I think when we have qualified, talented personnel sitting in tier two, it is the duty of every corporate to be able to provide the employment generating opportunities, in every tier two, tier three city. So those three cities that you spoke about, while this is the start, we believe this journey will continue. We are constantly looking at opportunities. The future of work model for us largely relies the collaborative platform base of working instead of physical proximity of individuals. So we have worked extensively over the past 3-4 years on that, which means that we can open any number of nodes in various parts of the country, not bound geographically at all. As for the headcount, yes, it's been flattish, and I think that's a sign of productivity gains driven through automation more than anything else, right? And all the investments into the technology, this is exactly how it manifests, which is not to just keep adding more and more headcount, as the volumes and the lines of businesses increase. Having said that, we definitely have a few more people today than what we had in the average of the previous year. And as I said, that's largely on account of two factors. Additional headcount, for regulation and compliance, which I do believe that is, short to medium term in nature. Right now I have the count definitely on the books, but we are automating a lot more of that component, so the dependency of human beings is coming down. Second is the growth of the subscale businesses such as alternatives and international and other businesses, where, still such standard scale is accomplished, we will need a few more people, but both of these will taper down into the coming year.
Got it. And what has been the IT spend as a percentage of revenues?
As a percentage of revenue, it should be about 20-21%. If you have a specific number, you can probably go on, but I believe it will be around 21%.
Yeah, it is 21%. Yeah.
Thanks, and all the best to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranit Shah from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Just two questions. One on the yields in the mutual fund business. I've seen a decline this quarter, even the equity share has gone up. Is this entirely because of telescopic pricing, or like Srikanth mentioned, between them, there were a lot of renegotiations you had in FY24, so there's an impact of that?
It's a combination of three distinct factors. Definitely telescopic pricing. Obviously, we have all witnessed a dramatic increase in the AUMs this year, obviously contributed by, individual asset management companies. And some AMCs grew much faster than the others, which is, publicly available information, as you know. And obviously, when AMCs go through, series of, when they clear the hurdles in terms of the telescopic rates, obviously there is an organic reduction in the rate that happens as because of the growth itself. Second, yes, a certain amount of rate renegotiation also has contributed to that. Third, while equity definitely has grown, it should also be noted that the passives have grown faster than equity, right, for the entire industry, not just for us. So obviously the asset mix change also has slightly adversely impacted. So a culmination of all of those three is what has resulted in the yield compression. I think it should be, it's heartening to see actually that the yield compression isn't significant in the context of several renegotiations, a significant spike in AUM, as well as an asset mix which had actually more, predisposed in favor of ETFs, which effectively means that, there is upside from here than downside.
Thanks for that. Just on the renegotiation part, was the impact primarily in 4Q or it was spread out throughout the year?
It's spread out, I think, a bit through the year. Some may have been in Q3, some in Q4, depending upon the which contract and the client.
Understood. Second one on the dividend, you have a 40% payout this year. So is that still fungible from year to year, or that will be a stated policy of around 40%-50%?
Vivek, would you want to cover that?
Yeah, sure, Shrikant. Thanks. So dividend will depend on yearly performance, but we would like to establish that whenever there are good results, company would recommend dividend to be paid to the shareholders. The board would recommend. And this is basically a start of the maiden dividend. And we do hope that the market is supportive and the results continue to be encouraging. We should honor the returns to the shareholders. But each year will be different. But given the management's recommendation, we would like to continue the trend of dividend payouts subject to results being encouraging. And we do expect the way the market outlook is and the results that are coming up in terms of the overall Indian economy and our segue into Southeast and our aspiration to go beyond, we should continue to do well, and we want to actually honor and respect the shareholders' returns.
Thanks, Vivek. That was very helpful. Just one last, your headline EBITDA margin target would still be in the 40%-45% range for full year going ahead?
Yes, we remain committed to 40%-45%. And if you see the last quarter, it has actually crossed, but our guidance remains 40%-45%.
Perfect. Thanks a lot. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Supratim Datta from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So my first question is on the issuer's RTA business. Now, if I look at the issuer RTA business, it looks like the market share within main board IPOs has increased significantly in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter, although we haven't seen any quarter-over-quarter revenue acceleration. So just wanted to understand that is there some delay in the revenue from these coming through? And another question on the issuer solution businesses, could you give us also what is your market share within SME IPOs? I'll wait for the answer before I move to my second question.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for asking that. On the revenue quarter-on-quarter growth, it is the nature of this business. Q2 and Q3 of every year will always be much better quarters in issuer solutions compared to Q1 and Q4. That is largely on account of a series of corporate actions around dividend declarations, buybacks, a lot of mergers, demergers that happen. So if you see the corporate register business over the last any number of years, you'll always find a Q2 jump over Q1 significantly higher. A Q3 will also be higher over Q2, but when it comes to Q4, much of the corporate actions would have died down, and hence you would always see a slight degrowth, in fact, on quarter-on-quarter basis, though you will find a reasonable jump from a year-on-year standpoint. In terms of the, I hope answered another question. Second, in terms of the IPO market share, we have 45% market share by value in terms of the IPOs. And as I've called out, we've been successful in transitioning existing clients as well. I know from some of the competition that is largely based on the superior technology that we offer as a solution to our clients, and the industry has been witnessing that, and I hope the trend will continue. Now, coming into this Q1 of this year, all the IPOs that we've done in the previous year, and obviously the expansion of Demat in itself in the previous year, will act as a force multiplier from this quarter onwards. Even as new IPOs we have won, those will be launched. Sometimes it is also a timing factor. For example, we have a significant number of large cap IPOs, though the mandates were won, but they have not yet gone public. So that, of course, is a factor of when the company wants to go public. And hopefully in this quarter and the coming quarters, we'll see a significant uptick in that side as well. E-IPO is a segment that we have started venturing only in the previous year. Traditionally, if you see KFintech, you know, we were more focused on the main boards. So we can't really claim to have any significant market share in this E-IPO. But, you know, now that we have taken it as a strategic item for us to also get into SME IPOs, you will see a significant growth in that segment in, you know, in this year and onwards. Of course, we have near about 5,000 plus unlisted clients. Now, some of them, you know, will also go on to go public rounds, and that will also help us. But broadly, what, you know, you would witness is a pretty revitalized focus to drive the issuer service business, you know, much faster in a much more concerted manner than in the past, and hopefully that will, you know, result in a faster growth trajectory in this line of business in this year and onwards.
Got it, got it. Thank you for that detailed answer. Now, moving to the international business, could you give us a, you know, sense that, you know, how much of the AUM would be contributed by your top five clients? And, you know, you have now added, you know, a few clients in Thailand and Singapore. And how much of AUM would they be able to add in FY25? You could give us some sense around those two numbers. Could be very helpful. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So our top five clients would contribute to near about 60% of the revenue, right, in the international fund services. And in terms of FY25, as I said, my total pipeline is near about $25 million on a recurring annualized basis, should all of them be one. But of course, there is always going to be timing gap as well as the, you know, deals that may not be one or get deferred, so on and so forth. But, you know, we have large deals, large size deals. I know I've been mentioning this in the past three quarters. Of course, only one of them got fructified, which is a Thailand-based deal. The two deals that we are chasing, one based in Philippines and one based in Malaysia, you know, we are hoping they would fructify in this quarter itself, given the stage of closure both those deals are at this moment in time. But of course, nothing is done till it's done, so we'll have to wait and watch. But outside of that, you know, we are doing a significant amount of, you know, upsell and cross-sell. If you recollect, we have about, you know, 24 client contracts for fund accounting in that part of the world and about 37 for a transfer agency. And some of them are common, which means for the same time we're able to offer both. But what we have started to do is use this opportunity to significantly cross-sell, you know, TA to the clients of FA and, you know, vice versa. And, of course, getting more contracts from the same client. As we have seen, for example, we have a presence in Hong Kong. We were managing the distributor transfer agency work for one of our clients, and we have just signed a full-fledged MF TA contract with the same client, right? So the client could be the same, but then we're able to win additional contracts from the same clients as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, sir. So just a few questions. First, you know, taking cues from the last question. Now, on your issuer solutions business, I understand that, you know, not all of the revenues are linked to folio count. But if I look at on an annualized basis, you know, like issue service revenues per folio, that has increased over the last 1 or 2 years to a decent number in FY23 and 24 versus FY22 levels or even 21 levels. Just wanted to get some sense of, you know, how much of this is linked to higher value-added services or higher non-folio linked revenues coming in from that segment, and how much of it is led by, let's say, more number of IPOs happening during the year or maybe in the course of the next year. In other words, if you were to kind of forecast this number, how should one kind of think about the revenue trajectory from both a folio and a non-folio perspective? Second, you mentioned the number of 5% of revenues during the quarter being linked to upfront income on the Hexagram entity, which also will have a certain recurring component attached to it going ahead. So this 5% will be 5% of your total revenues for the quarter or 5% of your international and other investor solution revenues? And the last question from my side is on the domestic alternatives business. You know, I understand that you know, you have shifted to more of an AUM-linked revenue model, whereas maybe some of the competitors might still be on a flat fee with a slab-wise or structure per scheme revenue model. Just wanted to get some sense of the stability in pricing in this particular business segment that you see evolving in the marketplace.
Understood. All great questions. So just in the reverse chronological order, yes, we have migrated to AUM-based pricing, and I believe that is the right way to you know, commercialize this particular piece of work. It is a highly bespoke work. It can't be done on a headcount-based model, and honestly, there is precious little talent that's available. If you attend any of the alternatives industry conclaves and symposiums, you know, one of the most common grievance you would hear from the industry, not a grievance, at least a feedback, is that they want to create several more, you know, structured funds, several more, you know, nuanced way of fund setup, but the fund managers are actually stifled by, to an extent, a lack of the technology and the people who can actually, you know, create those kind of funds, right? Which are probably very common if you were to go to Singapore or, you know, some of the other parts of the world. So to that extent, given the complexity of the work that is involved with that, in fact, I believe that we are, even though we have converted into AUM-based pricing, I believe that we are significantly still undercharging, you know, the work that for the work and the complexity of the work we do. There is a growth, there is a significant scope for expansion on the billability. To give you a comparison, you know, a typical fund administrator, if you were to have a fund in say Mauritius or Luxembourg or US or anywhere, they will charge anywhere between 15 to 25 basis points. Here in India, we are charging just about 2 to 3 basis points. Right, and you see the gap, and that is largely a factor of maybe undue competition, and which is not right actually, to be on a point, let alone a fixed fee structure, which is just completely, you know, meaningless, honestly, to run in this line of business. So yes, we have converted into AUM-based fee, and I'd like to believe that in time to come, we actually have to find ways to increase the basis point billability as against reducing it. And you had the first question, if I may just the question.
Yeah, the first question was on the issuer service business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just wanted to get some sense of, you know, from a folio-based growth versus a non-folio-based growth, how has it been for the last 1 or 2 years? Because, I mean, we don't get that entire segregation between folio-linked revenues and
yes,
non-folio-linked.
Yes, I'll cover that. Yeah. I'll cover that, sure. So in issuer services, roughly about 70% of the revenue of the issuer services is folio-based pricing. Yeah? About 20% plus would be the corporate actions related item, you know, which I explained to you would be dividend and merger-demerger activities, buybacks, so on and so forth. And roughly about anywhere between 8 to 10% now, when we're giving you range because it's going to fluctuate, will be the value-added services that we provide for the client, whether it is, for example, the electronic voting platforms, electronic AGM platforms, insider trading platforms, and ESOP administration. There's a whole lot of value addition that we render under the corporate secretarial function, which is a critical stakeholder for the issuer services. So I think probably a rule of thumb, you know, unless there are material changes in the industry, could be a 70-20-10 between folio corporate actions and corporate events, which is basically the platform solutions.
Got it. So my question was more from, you know, if I look at now, you're going to more into, let's say, SME IPOs, or let's say more of unicorns come up for listing over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years. I mean, how is the pricing differentiation between, let's say, a large corporate versus a small corporate? I mean, folio addition is one thing, but then there is also, I think the pricing is not would not be similar across corporates. How should one think of that?
The pricing is not, no two clients have the same pricing. I mean, it's a free market economy and, you know, we win, you know, we bid obviously based on a series of factors like you know, anybody else does, you know, looking at the profile of the client, their ability and intent to pay. And this is basically a very important function. You know, you are the investor relations side of it as a stakeholder relationship committee, which every large company has. The work we render has a direct bearing, and it's a board-based committee work out there. Now, there are some companies who may not particularly focus on this, and they may look more at, you know, expense or the otherwise of it. But progressively, you know, in the corporate governance side of it, every company wants to have a very solid registrar, because that is what's going to drive how you are engaged with your shareholders as a company, right? You know, your shareholders may end up having issues on share transfers, dematerialization, rematerialization, on, you know, series of compliance reporting that may have dividend payouts and all of that. Now, every company would want a marquee, you know, tech company who can do that work. So short answer, costs, you know, or rather the price would vary from client to client. And, you know, it would be based on a series of factors about their, you know, payability, our winnability quotient, you know, our understanding of market intelligence as to where the market would come from, so on and so forth. So, sorry, I won't be able to give a specific answer except to tell you that it varies by the client. And the range is actually quite spectacularly large, anywhere between 2 rupees a folio to even 20 to 25 rupees per folio for different clientele.
Got it. And lastly, on the data giving question, on the 5%, you know, sort of upfront booking of income on the FA entity, is it on...
No, that is only for the international, not for the total company.
Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to the time constraint, we will take this as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Devesh Agarwal for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
On behalf of IIFL Securities, I thank the KFin management for giving us an opportunity to host the call today. Before we conclude, would the management like to add any closing comments?
Thank you very much. This is Vivek Mathur. Appreciate the interest shown and the you know, the questions which have been asked. We look forward to engaging sessions in future as well. Thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you everyone for joining the call today. Muskan, you may now conclude the call.
Thank you. On behalf of IIFL Securities Limited, that concludes the conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.